Welcome to Future for America's presentation on the daily in the book of Daniel. This is a follow-up study to our series, The Final Rise and Fall of the King of the North. It's our contention that the subject of the daily in Daniel is one of the most misunderstood prophetic symbols in the study of prophecy. It also is a long time running controversy in Adventism itself concerning the daily and what it symbolizes. And the controversy that's ran in Adventism since the early 1900s and has pretty much subsided in our day and age, we will demonstrate that the reason it has subsided is because the false understanding of the daily has been so thoroughly accepted by Adventism that there is not much of a discussion about that any longer. But that controversy, as we look at it in this study, as we look at the true position and the false position, we're also going to add to that discussion that even though we're in agreement with the pioneer position and the Ellen White position, that when those positions, the pioneer and Ellen White's position, began to be battled against in the early 1900s in Adventism, that the proponents of the true position didn't understand at that point in history the significance of what the correct understanding of the daily would mean to us that live at the end of the world. And the significance of it to us that live at the end of the world is in connection with our previous study of verses 40 to 45 of Daniel 11. And in that study, we look to a passage that Sister White records for us where she points to a history that has been identified in prophecy and says that within that history will be illustrated scenes that are similar to the history that was still future to Ellen White's day, the history that is recorded in verses 40 to 45 of Daniel 11. So to understand the history that she was using as a pattern in this passage that she recorded is of extreme importance if we're going to use that pattern to identify the last six verses of Daniel 11. And in our study of Daniel 11, and I would encourage you to look at that if you haven't. The series is titled The Final Rise and Fall of the King of the North. We show that those verses are basically given a history of the healing of the deadly wound of the papacy. They're describing when the papacy fully returns to power to rule the world and ultimately come to its end with none to help. And we demonstrate that that history has begun in our day with the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1989, and that the information in those verses demonstrate that a Sunday law is imminent in the United States, that is the next thing that will occur in this sequence of prophecy. And one of the most important proof passages for that study is this passage in the Spirit of Prophecy that we're referring to. And we're going to look at this to begin our study of the daily. And we have to begin by referencing this to Daniel 11, so you'll see why we have a burden to discuss the daily, the history of the daily, the true and false position of the daily. And hopefully you'll see that it has more of a relevance now here at the end of the world than it did during the 1900 time period when Sister White's counsel was primarily, let's not agitate this subject. And we'll discuss why she was saying that as well. But what we're going to look at here is a passage found in Manuscript Releases, number 13, page 394. And what Sister White does in this passage is she points to the fact that Daniel 11 has nearly reached its complete fulfillment. And in our more thorough study of Daniel 11, we identify that Sister White understood that the time of the end was 1798. And verse 40 of Daniel 11 begins at the time of the end. So it begins in 1798. So the following parts of verse 40 come after 1798, and in the more complete study of that verse, we demonstrate that it comes all the way from 1798 to the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1989. And what we're saying by this is that this is future of Sister White's day and age. Verse 40, 41, and onward in Daniel 11 were the part of Daniel that were still ahead of Sister White's time. So in the places in the Spirit of Prophecy, and there's a few where Sister White speaks about the future fulfillment of Daniel 11, she's speaking about those last six verses of Daniel 11 because her and the pioneers understood that the first 39 verses of Daniel 11 were already fulfilled. And all you have to do, if you doubt that, is go back to some of the pioneer books. This one, of course, is a classic, Daniel and the Revelation by Uriah Smith. And the pioneers had an understanding of those first 39 verses, and where there was discussion in the early days of Adventism about the fulfillment of Daniel 11, the future fulfillment, they weren't speaking about verses 2 or 8 or 16. They were talking about verses 40 and onward. That was what was still future to their time. So when Sister White points to the future fulfillment of that, she's speaking about those last six verses. And in this passage, she's going to mention the fulfillment of Daniel 11, and she's going to say that much of the history that took place in Daniel chapter 11, the whole chapter there, and it covers a great deal of history in the whole chapter, from the Medes and Persians down till the time when the papacy comes to its end, but up to verse 39, verse 40, that history comes from the Medes and the Persians until the papacy is illustrated in the 1260-year time period. So she says much of the history that's recorded in Daniel 11 will be repeated when Daniel 11 comes to its fulfillment. Much of the history that's illustrated there will give us clues on understanding the last six verses of Daniel 11. But then, after she gives this general overview of the importance of the entire chapter of Daniel 11, she highlights specifically verses 30 through 36. And after she reads those, records those six verses, then she says, scenes similar to these described in these words will take place. So she references all of chapter 11, but most specifically, she references verse 30 to 36 and says, what took place in this history will be repeated. It's going to happen again. And it's all in the terms of, if you want to understand how Daniel 11 finally reaches its complete fulfillment at the end of the world, then understand the history of Daniel 11, but more importantly, the history of these verses. Now, this leads us into the subject of our study, because it's these six verses that she points to as the pattern for the fulfillment of Daniel 11 that describe the transition between pagan and papal Rome when the papacy came to rule the world during the Dark Ages, and this history is identified, among other things, with the symbolism of the daily. The daily is part of these verses she points to, and the daily has a specific thing which it identifies in this verse that she points to, and to misunderstand that is to misunderstand the clue, the pattern that she's pointing to for us to understand these last six verses. So, recognizing the importance of these verses in Daniel 11 for our day, as we do in a previous study, the importance of these verses is that they were designed by God to awaken God's people to the truth that the final rapid movements that Adventism was raised up to identify and clarify to the whole world, the final movements of prophecy, the Sunday law issue, the time of trouble, the little time of trouble, all these things, is about to begin. That's the significance of this study in Daniel. And therefore, when we misunderstand or misapply what the daily in verse 30 through 36 of Daniel represents, we give ourselves a wrong waymark, a wrong pattern, and we will limit our ability to understand this very important testimony. So that's the premise that we set forth for looking at the daily. And we'll begin with this passage out of manuscript releases number 13, page 394. And if you have your Bible and you open to verse 30, Sister White's going to refer to these six verses, and she's going to start in verse 30, and she cuts into verse 30 of Daniel 11 at where she cuts in and says, "He shall be grieved." She doesn't start right from the very beginning of the verse. She starts right after the word "therefore." But follow along with me if you would. "We have no time to lose. Troublous times are before us. The world is stirred with the spirit of war. Soon the scenes of trouble spoken of in the prophecies will take place. The prophecy in the 11th of Daniel has nearly reached its complete fulfillment. Much of the history that has taken place in fulfillment of this prophecy will be repeated. In the 30th verse, a power is spoken of that shall be grieved and return and have indignation against the Holy Covenant. So shall he do. He shall even return and have intelligence with them that forsake the Holy Covenant. An arm shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and they shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that make desolate. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. And they that understand among the people shall instruct many, yet they shall fall by the sword and by flame, by captivity and by spoil many days. Now when they shall fall, they shall be hoping with a little help, but many shall cleave to them with flatteries, and some of them of understanding shall fall to try them and to purge and to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done." Scenes similar to those described in these words will take place. We see evidence that Satan is fast obtaining the control of human minds who have not the fear of God before them. Let all read and understand the prophecies of this book, for we are now entering upon the time of trouble spoken of. And then she quotes Daniel 12, verses 1 through 4. "And at that time shall Michael stand up," and onward. And the significance of her quoting these verses in Daniel 12 is that Daniel 11 doesn't stop in verse 45. The vision that's left recorded in Daniel 11 moves right into Daniel 12. And Sister White basically in this passage is saying, Daniel 11, those last six verses that are still ahead of her lifetime, have nearly reached the complete fulfillment. We need to understand the history of Daniel 11 if we're going to have clues to what those last six verses are, especially the history recorded in verses 30 to 36. And the scenes that are recorded in verses 30 to 36 will be repeated as Daniel 11 comes to its fulfillment. And as it comes to its fulfillment, it leads right into the time of trouble spoken of in Daniel 12. So she's doing everything she can to pinpoint these last six verses in Daniel 11 and also give us a pattern for understanding those verses. Now, this being the case, it becomes extremely important to make sure that we understand what this history is in verses 30 to 36. And we'll find that William Miller and the pioneers understood the history of these verses as being the history that describes the transition from pagan Rome to papal Rome. And they understood the daily to be representing paganism or pagan Rome. And it was always in Daniel 11, Daniel 12, or Daniel 8 where the daily is used to describe paganism or pagan Rome. It's used in connection with the abomination of desolation or the transgression of desolation, which the pioneers understood to be identifying the papacy or the papal power. The daily being one desolating power and the abomination of desolation being the second desolating power. These two powers were described in Daniel. The pioneers understood correctly that they were being described as two desolating powers, and they were put together in Daniel to describe the relationship that they had with each other. And this history that transpires during the time periods that they're symbolizing, in the daily and the abomination of desolation, is a history that we need to understand if we're going to understand the history that's yet ahead of us as Daniel 11 comes to its complete fulfillment. But let's first focus on what the pioneers correctly understood to the daily to be, and we can begin with a testimony that William Miller makes about the daily, and this is taken from the Review and Herald, January 1858. This is William Miller speaking about how he came to understand what the daily and the Book of Daniel represented. "I read on and can find no other case in which the daily was found but in Daniel. I then, by aid of a concordance, took those words which stood in connection with it, take away. He shall take away the daily from the time that the daily shall be taken away. I read on, and I thought I would find no light on the text. Finally, I came to 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 7 and 8. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work, only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way, and then shall the wicked be revealed. And when I had come to that text, oh, how clear and glorious the truth appeared. There it is. That is the daily. Well, now, what does Paul mean by he who now letteth or hindereth? By the man of sin and the wicked. Popery is meant. Well, what is it which hinders popery from being revealed? Why, it is paganism. Well, then, the daily must mean paganism." Now, what William Miller came to understand was that the daily meant was symbolizing paganism. And if we look at Daniel 8, we see the daily represented in verses 11, 12, and 13. And in Daniel 11:31, which we just read, we see the daily referenced there. And also in Daniel 12, verse 11, it says, "From the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days." So William Miller, in Daniel 12:11, he sees that the daily is taken away. In Daniel 11:31, it says, "And shall take away the daily." So here's another place where he sees the daily taken away. And in Daniel 8, verse 11, it says, "Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away." So he's seeing this daily taken away, and he can't understand what it is. And through the aid of a concordance, he realizes that in Thessalonians, that Paul is speaking to them in the terms of that the man of sin at that time is yet in the future. And the man of sin is not going to ascend to the throne of the earth until the power that then existed and the power that was restraining the man of sin from rising to the throne of the world was removed. And the power that then existed and that was restraining popery from taking control of the world during the time that Paul was writing to the Thessalonians was the pagan Roman Empire, paganism. It was then the controlling influence of the then known world. And that history, the relationship between paganism and papalism, is one of the most essential and important histories that is discussed in Bible prophecy. This is part of what Bible prophecy is built around, is this relationship between pagan Rome and papal Rome. For instance, what I mean by that, in Revelation 13:2, we see the dragon gives his seat and his power and his authority to the beast. And when Sister White comments on verse 2 of Revelation 13, she tells us that the dragon there, although representing Satan in a secondary sense, it represents pagan Rome, and that pagan Rome gives its power and authority and its seat to the papacy, to that the beast that's being discussed in Revelation 13 in the first verses. And the seat that it gave it that pagan Rome gave to the papacy there in verse 2 of Revelation 13 is the city of Rome. That's the place where the papacy was going to rule from. And that this transition about the pagan Roman Empire turning over the keys of the kingdom, so to speak, to the papal Roman Empire is woven throughout the prophecy of Daniel and Revelation. And Daniel weaves it through his prophecy by using the symbol of the daily. Now, as the pioneers came to a conclusion about what the daily represented, it was important to their understanding. And if we look at the passage in Daniel 8, verses 11 through 13, we'll come across one of the conclusions that they came up with. And the conclusion being that there's two desolating powers being represented here. And the first, of course, is pagan Rome. The second is papal Rome. And let's read verses 11 through 13, and I'll try to show what we mean here. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of a host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And a host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and prospered. Then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? Now, in a following study, we're going to look at Daniel 8 more closely. But what I hope that you see here is in verse 13, it says, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation? In the Hebrew there of that sentence, the pioneers correctly came to understand that what was being asked is how long are both these desolating powers? They understood from the Hebrew of this verse that two desolating powers were being described here. And we can look from this same article in the Review and Herald where William Miller is quoted to a passage where Josiah Litch is being quoted. This article is dealing with the daily. This is Review and Herald, January 1858. And Josiah Litch will articulate how the pioneers understood these two powers in verse 13. The daily desolation is how they understood it, and the transgression of desolation, two desolating powers. This is Josiah Litch. The daily sacrifice is the present reading of the text, but no such thing as sacrifice is found in the original. This is acknowledged on all hands. It is a gloss or construction put upon it by the translators. The true reading is the daily and the transgression of desolation. Daily and transgression being connected together by and, the daily and the transgression of desolation. They are two desolating powers which were to desolate the sanctuary and the host. The pioneers seen these two desolating powers as two distinct powers, and the first being the daily of pagan Rome or paganism, and the second being the transgression of desolation or the abomination of desolation, as Daniel identifies it later, and that being papal Rome. So this was the pioneer position, and you'll notice in this passage that Josiah Litch says that the word sacrifice is added to the text by human reason, and this is a very important understanding in the study of the daily. Because when the daily is mentioned in the book of Daniel, it always has connected with it the word sacrifice, and you'll notice that that's italicized in your King James, which means it was put in by the translators. It's not part of the text. And sometimes when the translators would throw in a word into the translation, it better clarified the word, and it was helpful. But in this setting, in the book of Daniel, they threw it in there, and it wasn't helpful. And Sister White confirms Josiah Litch's comments, and she adds some light in a broader fashion to our study here of the daily. But we'll read a passage in early writings where she confirms that this word sacrifice does not belong in connection with the daily found in Daniel. And she also is going to endorse a chart. But let's read this from Early Writings, page 74 and 75. Now, we're going to look at the chart in a moment, not right now. We're going to look at a couple charts just for some more evidence. But also in this passage, you'll notice that Sister White says that the man that gave the judgment hour cry during the 1840-1844 time period, we're all united on what the daily was. And if you want to know what they understood it to be, you just go back to the Pioneer Writings and you'll find that they believed it was paganism. And she also says in this passage that they had the correct view. Now that should bring the discussion about what the daily really symbolizes to a conclusion right there, but it doesn't, and we'll discuss how it gets perverted in the early 1900s. Until today, the predominant opinion in Adventism is the wrong view of the daily. But as we go through this passage, let's listen for this perspective of what Sister White's saying, that sacrifice doesn't belong to the text, that the people that gave the judgment hour message had the correct view, and that the chart that they were using during the judgment hour time period was ordained by the Lord. This is Early Writings, page 74, 75. September 23rd, the Lord showed me that he had stretched out his hand the second time to recover the remnant of his people, and that efforts must be redoubled in this gathering time. In the scattering, Israel was smitten and torn, but now in the gathering time, God will heal and bind up his people. In the scattering, efforts made to spread the truth had but little effect, accomplished but little or nothing. But in the gathering, when God has set his hand to gather his people, efforts to spread the truth will have their designed effect. All should be united and zealous in the work. I saw that it was wrong for any to refer to the scattering for examples to govern us now in the gathering, for if God should do no more for us now than he did then, Israel would never be gathered. I have seen that the 1843 chart was directed by the hand of the Lord, and that it should not be altered, that the figures were as he wanted them, that his hand was over and hid a mistake in some of the figures so that none could see it until his hand was removed. Then I saw, in relation to the daily, that the word sacrifice was supplied by man's wisdom and does not belong to the text, and that the Lord gave the correct view of it to those who gave the judgment hour cry. When union existed before 1844, nearly all were united on the correct view of the daily. But in the confusion since 1844, other views have been embraced, and darkness and confusion have followed. Time has not been a test since 1844, and it will never again be a test. The Lord has shown me that the message of the third angel must go and be proclaimed to the scattered children of the Lord, but it must not be hung on time. I saw that some were getting a false excitement arising from preaching time, but the third angel's message is stronger than time can be. I saw that this message can stand on its own foundation and needs not time to strengthen it, and it will go in mighty power and do its work and will be cut short in righteousness. Now, there's many important concepts in there, but I'd like you to look at this time at this 1843 chart. We have a facsimile of it over here. And you'll notice that right in the center of it, the 1,335 days and the 1,290 days of Daniel 12 is illustrated. And you'll notice right next to that the year 508. This year was identified by the pioneers as the time when the daily began its work. Paganism began its work of removing the three horns of Daniel 7 in order for the papacy to begin its 1,260-year time period. And that date, 538, is right below that 508 figure. And this is the chart that the pioneers used, and you see there that they clearly understood the daily to be paganism. And we have another chart here, which is a chart that was produced in 1861. And also, if you focus in on the center of that, you can see that 7 years later, they're still identifying the daily with a historical date of 508 and as paganism. So the pioneers and the pioneer movement understood the daily to be paganism, and Sister White says that those men that gave the judgment hour cry were not only united about their view of the daily, but that the Lord had given them the correct view. Now, the predominant view in Adventism today, the one that is taught in our schools and our university, is that the daily represents the work that Christ is doing in the sanctuary above. This is an incorrect view. Now, part of the reason that men choose that view is because the word daily, in the Hebrew continual, is used often in the passages in the Bible that deal with the sanctuary. The continual burnt offering, the continual showbread, this continual, this word that is translated as daily in Daniel is used to describe many things that go on in the parts of the Bible identifying the sanctuary and the offerings and the work that went on in the sanctuary. So when the translators came across this word and instantly recognized that this continual is a word that comes right out of the sanctuary, they automatically added in the word sacrifice to it. And had Daniel's use of the word continual, or daily, been used to identify the work in the sanctuary or some aspect of the work of the sanctuary, then for the translators to have added the word sacrifice in there, that would have been the correct thing to do. If the true understanding of the daily is identifying the work of Christ in the most holy place above, or in the heavenly sanctuary above, period, both his work that took place before 1844 in the holy place and what he's doing now in the most holy place, if that was what was being described by the daily, then to add the word sacrifice would be acceptable. We wouldn't find the prophet of the Lord saying that it had been added by human wisdom and does not belong to the text. See, the pioneers, which Sister White endorses that they had the correct view, they didn't view it as identifying Christ's work in the sanctuary above. They viewed it as paganism. Now, this understanding that it was identifying the work of the sanctuary had existed before the 1844 movement in evangelical Christianity. It wasn't a large or important doctrine or understanding, but there was writings about it before that time, and they had identified it incorrectly as Christ's work in the sanctuary or the sanctuary above. But William Miller essentially came out with a new view, and we've looked at how he arrived at that he seen it symbolizing this power in Thessalonians that was restraining the man of sin from coming to the throne of the world. And Sister White here, in this passage in early writing, is endorsing William Miller and the other Millerites' view that it was paganism. She's endorsing the idea that the word sacrifice doesn't belong to the text. And you'll notice in the final paragraph here that we looked at in early writings, she emphasizes that time is no longer a test since 1844, and that the message that we have shouldn't be hung on time. Now, the reason that I'm touching on this before we leave this particular passage in the Spirit of Prophecy is this. Today, one of the ramifications of the false teaching on the daily in Adventism today is we no longer identify it as paganism, and we no longer identify it historically as 508 when paganism began its work of removing the three horns of Daniel 7. And because we do not identify it as paganism any longer, and we don't emphasize the 508 time period as we should, then in Adventism today we find people that we are believing that the time prophecies recorded in Daniel 12 must have some future application. They're not identifying this history of the transition of pagan Rome and papal Rome. Therefore, the daily is identifying a 1290-day period, a 1335-day period here at the end of the world. And if we can just find out the beginning mark of this time period or some kind of historical event that marks this, then we can project a time prophecy here at the end of the world, and we'll have a message that's hung on time. So it's important to notice that when Sister White is endorsing the pioneer view, one of the angles that she emphasizes here is that the correct view of the daily puts it at a certain place in history, 508, and establishes that, and then endorses the pioneer position that the time prophecies in Daniel 12 came to fulfillment in the 1843, 1844, 1798 time period, and they have already been fulfilled. And if we take that position with the pioneers, then we are not tempted to take those time prophecies and try to put them off in the future. And that's one of the pieces of information here in early writings that Sister White has left recorded in relationship to the daily. Now, one of the other more minor false teachings of what the daily is in Adventism is that it represents the Sabbath, the daily being the Sabbath being the continual true day of worship throughout time, and that this daily in Daniel, when it's talking about being taken away, is identifying when the Sunday law is enforced at the end of the world, when the God's true Sabbath is taken away or removed by the false Sabbath. Now, we have to mention these two views of the false views of the daily as far as Christ's work in the sanctuary and the Sabbath, because as we continue through this study, we're going to illustrate how the logic of what's recorded in Daniel destroys both those positions, but really strengthens the position of William Miller and the other pioneers. Now, in our study, which will follow, we're going to go through Daniel 8 more in depth, but not totally in depth. And we're going to consider from the beginning of the chapter down to verse 14 what's being shared by Daniel in relationship to the daily. But we want to look at verse 11 here just briefly. We're going to seek to demonstrate in our next hour when we look at Daniel 8 that verse 11 is speaking about pagan Rome. Let's read verse 11. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host. This he that is under discussion here, we're going to suggest here, is pagan Rome, and that he magnified himself to the prince of the host when pagan Rome allowed and endorsed Christ being crucified on the cross. And it says, and by him, by pagan Rome, the daily, paganism, was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Now, we're going to find when we look at Daniel 8, that Daniel 8 may be one of the most powerful prophetic chapters in the Bible. In my understanding, it is. But my understanding is limited. I haven't studied very few of the chapters of prophecy in the Bible to the shallow depth that I have looked at Daniel 8. So there's no doubt other chapters covering prophecy in the Bible that may be as deep and profound as chapter 8 of Daniel. But my contention is that we do not recognize the depth that Daniel has encoded into Daniel chapter 8 through his choices of words and gender of words and the way that he oscillates back and forth from different ideas. And we'll look at that more closely here in the next presentation. But here in verse 11, we see one of the contrasts that Daniel uses in chapter 8, because he speaks in verse 11 about sanctuary. Now, this word that has been translated as sanctuary in verse 11 is a Hebrew word that can be used to identify God's sanctuary, whether it's his God's sanctuary on earth or God's sanctuary in heaven. But it also can be correctly translated to describe a pagan sanctuary. It's a more generic Hebrew word to describe sanctuary, period. And Daniel, in this same chapter speaks about God's sanctuary. And one place that he does it is in verse 14, but he also does it in verse 13. Let's read the end of verse 13, where it's speaking about what these two desolating powers are going to do. It says, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot. And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. So in verse 13 and 14, we see Daniel speaking about a sanctuary. And this Hebrew word that is translated in verse 13 and verse 14 is a different Hebrew word than Daniel uses in verse 11 to say sanctuary. This Hebrew word in verse 13 and 14 is a Hebrew word that is only used to identify God's sanctuary, period. His sanctuary on earth or in heaven, but it's only God's holy sanctuary. It's never used to identify a pagan sanctuary. So I believe that Daniel was inspired to choose the words in this chapter, and this is one of the choices that he uses here in verse 11, contrasting with verse 13 and 14 in the Hebrew words that he uses to identify sanctuary. So if we go back to verse 11 now, we would suggest to you that this sanctuary of verse 11 isn't God's sanctuary. It's pagan Rome is the one that is under discussion here. And pagan Rome, it says, and the place of pagan Rome's sanctuary would be cast down. Now, pagan Rome had a sanctuary that was associated with pagan Rome, and it had a place that it was at. And it's the place that this sanctuary was at that would be cast down. And this phrase, the place of his sanctuary cast down, when we understand where the place of his sanctuary is and what it means that it was cast down, we'll see that it's a very significant aspect of the prophetic testimony about pagan Rome. And this testimony about the history of pagan Rome is simply this. In Daniel 11, many of us may not recognize it, but in Daniel 11, the time period that pagan Rome was to rule the world is given. Pagan Rome was going to rule the world for 360 years because Daniel 11, when describing pagan Rome, says that it would rule for a time, and a time in Bible prophecy is 360 years. And when we go back into history and look at the Battle of Actium, which is the starting point that historians identify for the time period of pagan Rome's time to rule the world, which occurred in 31 BC. And then we look at the mark in history that identifies the end of the rule of pagan Rome. We come to 330 AD, which is exactly 360 years. And the event that marked the end of the time period for pagan Rome to rule the world was when Constantine moved the capital of the Roman Empire from the city of Rome to Constantinople. That marked the end of the glorious Roman Empire rule of the world. And this is part of the history associated with pagan Rome and the history of the transition from pagan to papal Rome. And as we spoke about briefly a minute ago in Revelation 13:2, when the dragon, and in a secondary sense, Sister White tells us this is pagan Rome, the dragon gave its seat, which is its place of authority, to the beast, which is papal Rome. Part of this history in prophecy is this transition from pagan Rome to papal Rome. And part of this truth is that pagan Rome prepared the way for papal Rome to rise by moving its seat of authority to Constantinople, thus opening up the city of Rome as the place where papal Rome was going to put its headquarters. And in the city of Rome, there was a pagan sanctuary that was associated with pagan Rome that was its sanctuary. And that was in the city of Rome. That was the place where the pagan sanctuary was at. And the place, being the city of Rome, was cast down prophetically and historically when Constantine moved the headquarters from the Roman Empire, from Rome to Constantinople. So in verse 11 of chapter 8, if we go back there, we see what this last phrase is saying is the place of his sanctuary, the place of pagan Rome's sanctuary, would be cast down, is saying nothing more than the city of Rome was going to be cast down, and this is part of the characteristic that identifies pagan Rome. Just as in the beginning of that verse, when it says, yea, he magnified himself to the prince of the host, this he is pagan Rome, and they magnify themselves to the prince of the host by crucifying Christ. So let's go back to one other pioneer historian that was in this same article that we've been looking at from the Review and Herald, January 1858, and this is from Apollos Hill, and he talks about this pagan sanctuary that's being identified here in verse 11. What can be meant by the sanctuary of paganism? Paganism, an error and error of every kind, have their sanctuary as well as truth. There are the temples or asylums consecrated to their service. Some particular and renowned temple of paganism may, then, be supposed to be here spoken of. And he's speaking about this verse that we've been looking at, verse 11. Which of its numerous distinguished temples may it be? One of the most magnificent specimens of classic architecture is called the Pantheon. Its name signifies the temple or asylum of all the gods. The place of its location is Rome. The idols of the nations conquered by the Romans were sacredly deposited in some niche or department of this temple, and in many cases became objects of worship by the Romans themselves. Could we find a temple of paganism that was more strikingly his sanctuary? Well, no, we can't. The Pantheon is the sanctuary that's associated with pagan Rome, and it's the sanctuary that most clearly symbolizes paganism. When Rome would go out and conquer another nation, if that nation worshipped any false deities that Rome wasn't already worshipping, it would gather up those idols and those different relics, and it would bring them back to this pantheon and make a place for those deities to reside. And Rome brought into its sanctuary every pagan god that it could find. And so when we look here at verse 11, now with a little bit of insight, we can see that the pioneers would teach that, yea, pagan Rome magnified himself to Christ when they crucified him, and by him, or if you look at the Hebrew there of this by him more closely, it would better be translated from him. And from him, paganism was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Now, we're going to look at this from him, paganism shall be taken away more closely. We're not dodging that subject. We're just filling in the little bits and pieces around it before we look at that more closely. But speaking of pagan Rome, this last part says, and the place, Rome, the city of Rome, the place where his sanctuary of renown is at, is cast down when Constantine moves the capital to Constantinople. Now, this transition that's described in connection with the daily and the abomination of desolation is a transition that is the focus of understanding prophecy correctly. And it's a focus that Sister White identifies in several places. We're going to look at a couple, and what I'm hoping you'll see here is that Sister White contrasts paganism with papalism and their historical transition enough that we need to recognize that this same history is identified in Daniel and in Revelation. And when Sister White emphasizes it so much, that we need to understand that history for ourselves. And even more so, once we've considered this opening passage from the Spirit of Prophecy that we began with, because it's this history, this relationship between the daily and the abomination of desolation, that Sister White says, this scene similar to these will be repeated. They will be repeated. So what are these scenes? So what I'm suggesting to you here is when someone puts the wrong construction on what the daily is, they're putting the wrong construction on the very history that is so often uplifted in Daniel and Revelation in the Spirit of Prophecy, and the very history that Sister White says gives us the pattern for end-time events. So we're on very sacred ground, so to speak, prophetically in this transition. And here's a couple places where Sister White tries to highlight for us this history. This is from The Great Controversy, page 54 and 55. In the 6th century, the papacy had become firmly established. Its seat of power was fixed in the imperial city, and the Bishop of Rome was declared to be the head over the entire church. Paganism had given place to the papacy. The dragon had given to the beast his power and his seat and great authority, Revelation 13:2. And now began the 1260 years of papal oppression foretold in the prophecies of Daniel and the Revelation, Daniel 7:25, Revelation 13:5-7. Thus says the prophet, the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,203 days, Revelation 12:6. So Sister White's speaking of this transition. She speaks specifically about the imperial city. This imperial city, this goes back to identify Rome as the capital of the pagan Roman Empire. That's where the term imperial comes from. That papal Rome had received this city. This is part of the testimony here in Daniel 8:11. But she speaks of this transition. Here's another place, Signs of the Times, November 1st, 1899. Through paganism and then through the papacy, Satan exerted his power for many centuries in an effort to blot from the earth God's faithful witnesses. First paganism, then papalism. This is the sequence of prophecy. And within this sequence is a history that is worthy of our consideration if we're going to understand the sequence, the issues, the controversies that took place then, that will be that we're figuratively pointing forward to the sequence and the issues and the controversies that are beginning to take place in these days. And to change what the daily means is to rewrite history and rewrite it in such a way that we're lost, adrift, without any compass in the prophetic waters. And brothers and sisters, I would suggest to you that some are familiar with the controversy that has taken place over the daily in the history of Adventism, a controversy that began in 1900 and continued beyond the death of Ellen White. And that controversy was simply an argument against the correct position of the pioneers and a new false view. It was simply that. But that controversy never reached the depth of importance that it should have for us today. Because today, we need to take the very history that the daily is identifying as one of the most important clues for bringing prophecy into focus here at the end of the world. And I would suggest to you that we're going to look at this controversy in Adventism in a moment, but that those that have considered the history of that controversy before may have thought it a worthy study, but it's much more important now. It's much more important now that we began to walk through these end-time events, because if we misunderstand that history and can't see that pattern for ourselves today, then Satan has accomplished what Sister White said he would do. Because if you remember our reading from early writings, she said that to have the wrong view there would bring in darkness and confusion. And that's what Satan's attempting to do with our prophetic understanding at the end of the world, is bring in darkness and confusion. And we'll find, the more closely we look at the controversy of the daily in Adventism, that this was one of his main attacks to do so. So we'd ask you to please come back to part two of this as we further look at the controversy surrounding the daily. Thank you.